Goldsmith's Friend Abroad Again by Mark Twain. Note: no experience is set down in the following letters which had to be invented. Fancy is not needed to give variety to the history of a Chinaman's sojourn in America. Plain fact is amply sufficient. Letter I, Shanghai, 18. Dear Ching Fu, it is all settled, and I am to leave my oppressed and overburdened native land and cross the sea to that noble realm, where all are free and all equal, and none reviled or abused, America. America, whose precious privilege it is to call herself the land of the free, and the home of the brave. We and all that are about us here look over the waves longingly, contrasting the privations of this our birthplace with the opulent comfort of that happy refuge. We know how America has welcomed the Germans, and the Frenchmen, and the stricken and sorrowing Irish, and we know how she has given them bread and work, and liberty, and how grateful they are. And we know that America stands ready to welcome all other oppressed peoples and offer her abundance to all that come, without asking what their nationality is, or their creed or color. And, without being told it, we know that the foreign sufferers she has rescued from oppression and starvation are the most eager of her children to welcome us, because, having suffered themselves, they know what suffering is, and having been generously succored, they long to be generous to other unfortunates, and thus show that magnanimity is not wasted upon them. Asong, Hawaii, Letter 2, at Sea, 18. Dear Ching Fu, we are far away at sea now, on our way to the beautiful land of the free, and home of the brave. We shall soon be where all men are alike, and where sorrow is not known. The good American who hired me to go to his country is to pay me $12 a month, which is immense wages, you know, 20 times as much as one gets in China. My passage in the ship is a very large sum indeed. It is a fortune, and this I must pay myself eventually, but I am allowed ample time to make it good to my employer in he advancing it now. For a mere form, I have turned over my wife, my boy, and my two daughters to my employer's partner for security for the payment of the ship fare. But my employer says they are in no danger of being sold, for he knows I will be faithful to him, and that is the main security. I thought I would have $12 to begin life with in America, but the American consul took two of them for making a certificate that I was shipped on the steamer. He has no right to do more than charge the ship $2 for one certificate for the ship, with the number of her Chinese passengers set down in it. But he chooses to force a certificate upon each and every Chinaman, and put the $2 in his pocket. As 1,300 of my countrymen are in this vessel, the consul received $2,600 for certificates. My employer tells me that the government at Washington know of this fraud, and are so bitterly opposed to the existence of such a wrong, that they tried hard to have the extra the fee, I mean, legalized by the last Congress. Pacific and Mediterranean Steamship Bills. Ed. Mem. But as the bill did not pass, the consul will have to take the fee dishonestly until next Congress makes it legitimate. It is a great, and good and noble country, and hates all forms of vice and chicanery. We are in that part of the vessel always reserved for my countrymen. It is called the steerage. It is kept for us, my employer says, because it is not subject to changes of temperature and dangerous drafts of air. It is only another instance of the loving unselfishness of the Americans for all unfortunate foreigners. The steerage is a little crowded, and rather warm and close, but no doubt it is best for us that it should be so. Yesterday our people got to quarreling among themselves, and the captain turned a volume of hot steam upon a mass of them, and scalded 80 or 90 of them more or less severely. Flakes and ribbons of skin came off some of them. There was wild shrieking and struggling, while the vapor enveloped the great throng, and so some who were not scalded got trampled upon and hurt. We do not complain, for my employer says this is the usual way of quieting disturbances on board the ship, and that it is done in the cabins among the Americans every day or two. Congratulate me, Ching Fool, in 10 days more I shall step upon the shore of America, and be received by her great-hearted people, and I shall straighten myself up and feel that I am a free man among freemen. Assam, Hawaii, Letter 3, San Francisco, 18. Dear Ching Fool, I stepped ashore jubilant. I wanted to dance, shout, sing, worship the generous land of the free, and home of the brave. But as I walked from the gangplank, a man in a gray uniform, policeman, kicked me violently behind, and told me to look out, so my employer translated it. As I turned, another officer of the same kind, struck me with a short club, and also instructed me to look out. I was about to take hold of my end of the pole which had mine and Tom Woe's basket and things suspended from it, when a third officer hit me with his club to signify that I was to drop it, and then kicked me to signify that he was satisfied with my promptness. Another person came now, and searched all through our basket and bundles, emptying everything out on the dirty wharf. Then this person and another searched us all over. They found a little package of opium sewed into the artificial part of Hom Wo's queue, and they took that, and also they made him prisoner, and handed him over to an officer, who marched him away. They took his luggage too, because of his crime, and as our luggage was so mixed together that they could not tell mine from his, they took it all. When I offered to help divide it, they kicked me, and desired me to look out. Having now no baggage and no companion, I told my employer that if he was willing, I would walk about a little and see the city and the people until he needed me. I did not like to seem disappointed with my reception in the good land of refuge for the oppressed, and so I looked and spoke as cheerily as I could. But he said, "Wait a minute, I must be vaccinated to prevent my taking the smallpox." I smiled and said I had already had the smallpox, as he could see by the marks, and so I need not wait to be vaccinated, as he called it. But he said it was the law, and I must be vaccinated anyhow. The doctor would never let me pass, for the law obliged him to vaccinate all Chinamen, and charge them $10 apiece for it, and I might be sure that no doctor who would be the servant of that law would let a fee slip through his fingers to accommodate any absurd fool who had seen fit to have the disease in some other country. And presently the doctor came, and did his work, and took my last penny, my $10, which were the hard savings of nearly a year, and a half of labor and privation. Ah, if the lawmakers had only known there were plenty of doctors in the city glad of a chance to vaccinate people for a dollar or two, they would never have put the price up so high against a poor friendless Irish, or Italian, or Chinese pauper fleeing to the good land to escape hunger and hard times. Assam, Hawaii, Letter IV, San Francisco, 18. Dear Ching Fool, I have been here about a month now, and am learning a little of the language every day. My employer was disappointed in the matter of hiring us out to service to the plantations in the far eastern portion of this continent. His enterprise was a failure, and so he set us all free, merely taking measures to secure to himself the repayment of the passage money which he paid for us. We are to make this good to him out of the first monies we earn here. He says it is $60 apiece. We were thus set free about 2 weeks after we reached here. We had been massed together in some small houses up to that time, waiting. I walked forth to seek my fortune. I was to begin life a stranger in a strange land, without a friend, or a penny, or any clothes but those I had on my back. I had not any advantage on my side in the world, not one, except good health and the lack of any necessity to waste any time or anxiety on the watching of my baggage. No, I forget. I reflected that I had one prodigious advantage over paupers in other lands. I was in America. I was in the heaven-provided refuge of the oppressed and the forsaken. Just as that comforting thought passed through my mind, some young men set a fierce dog on me. I tried to defend myself, but could do nothing. I retreated to the recess of a closed doorway, and there the dog had me at his mercy, flying at my throat and face, or any part of my body that presented itself. I shrieked for help, but the young men only jeered and laughed. Two men in gray uniforms, policemen is their official title, looked on for a minute, and then walked leisurely away. But a man stopped them, and brought them back, and told them it was a shame to leave me in such distress. Then the two policemen beat off the dog with small clubs, and a comfort it was to be rid of him, though I was just rags and blood from head to foot. The man who brought the policeman asked the young men why they abused me in that way, and they said they didn't want any of his meddling. And they said to him, "This ching divil comes till America to take the bread out o' decent intelligent white men's mouths, and were they try to defend their rights there's a day-lo fuss made about it." They began to threaten my benefactor, and as he saw no friendliness in the faces that had gathered meanwhile, he went on his way. He got many a curse when he was gone. The policeman now told me I was under arrest, and must go with them. I asked one of them what wrong I had done to anyone that I should be arrested, and he only struck me with his club and ordered me to hold my yap. With a jeering crowd of street boys and loafers at my heels, I was taken up an alley and into a stone-paved dungeon which had large cells all down one side of it, with iron gates to them. I stood up by a desk, while a man behind it wrote down certain things about me on a slate. One of my captors said, "Enter a charge against this Chinaman of being disorderly and disturbing the peace." I attempted to say a word, but he said, "Silence. Now ye had better go slow, my good fellow. This is two or three times you've tried to get off some of your d-d insolence. Lip won't do here. You've got to simmer down, and if you don't take to it paceable we'll see if we can't make you. Fat's your name?" "Ah Song Hai." "Alias what?" I said I did not understand, and he said what he wanted was my true name, for he guessed I picked up this one since I stole my last chickens. They all laughed loudly at that. Then they searched me. They found nothing, of course. They seemed very angry, and asked who I supposed would owe my bail or pay my fine. When they explained these things to me, I said I had done nobody any harm, and why should I need to have bail or pay a fine? Both of them kicked me, and warned me that I would find it to my advantage to try and be as civil as convenient. I protested that I had not meant anything disrespectful. Then one of them took me to one side and said, "Now look here, Johnny, it's no use you playing softly with us. We main business, ye know, and the sooner ye put us on the scent of a V, the easier ye'll save yourself from a deal of trouble. Ye can't get out o' this for any less. Who's your friends?" I told him I had not a single friend in all the land of America, and that I was far from home and help, and very poor. And I begged him to let me go. He gathered the slack of my blouse collar in his grip, and jerked and shoved and hauled at me across the dungeon, and then unlocking an iron cell gate thrust me in with a kick and said, "Rot there, ye foreign spawn, till ye learn that there's no room in America for the likes of ye or your nation." Asong Hawaii, Letter V, San Francisco, 18. Dear Ching Fu, you will remember that I had just been thrust violently into a cell in the city prison when I wrote last. I stumbled and fell on someone. I got a blow and a curse equals, and on top of these a kick or two and a shove. In a second or two it was plain that I was in a nest of prisoners, and was being asked around, for the instant I was knocked out of the way of one I fell on the head or heels of another, and was promptly ejected, only to land on a third prisoner, and get a new contribution of kicks, and curses and a new destination. I brought up at last in an unoccupied corner, very much battered and bruised and sore, but glad enough to be let alone for a little while. I was on the flagstones, for there was no furniture in the den except a long, broad board, or combination of boards, like a barn door, and this bed was accommodating 5 or 6 persons, and that was its full capacity. They lay stretched side by side, snoring when not fighting. One end of the board was 4 inches higher than the other, and so the slant answered for a pillow. There were no blankets, and the night was a little chilly. The nights are always a little chilly in San Francisco, though never severely cold. The board was a deal more comfortable than the stones, and occasionally some flagstone plebeian like me would try to creep to a place on it. And then the aristocrats would hammer him good, and make him think a flag pavement was a nice enough place after all. I lay quiet in my corner, stroking my bruises, and listening to the revelations the prisoners made to each other and to me, for some that were near me talked to me a good deal. I had long had an idea that Americans, being free, had no need of prisons, which are a contrivance of despots for keeping restless patriots out of mischief. So I was considerably surprised to find out my mistake. Ours was a big general cell, it seemed, for the temporary accommodation of all comers whose crimes were trifling. Among us they were 2 Americans, 2 Riesers, Mexicans, a Frenchman, a German, 4 Irishmen, a Chilean, and, in the next cell, only separated from us by a grating, 2 women, all drunk, and all more or less noisy. And as night fell and advanced, they grew more and more discontented and disorderly, occasionally shaking the prison bars and glaring through them at the slowly pacing officer, and cursing him with all their hearts. The 2 women were nearly middle-aged, and they had only had enough liquor to stimulate instead of stupefy them. Consequently, they would fondle and kiss each other for some minutes, and then fall to fighting, and keep it up till they were just 2 grotesque tangles of rags and blood and tumbled hair. Then they would rest a while, and pant and swear. While they were affectionate, they always spoke of each other as Addies, but while they were fighting, Trumpet was the mildest name they could think of, and they could only make that do by tacking some sounding profanity to it. In their last fight, which was toward midnight, one of them bit off the other's finger, and then the officer interfered and put the greaser into the arc cell to answer for it, because the woman that did it laid it on him, and the other woman did not deny it because, as she said afterward, she anted another crack at the hussy when her finger quit hurting, and so she did not want her removed. By this time those 2 women had mutilated each other's clothes to that extent that there was not sufficient left to cover their nakedness. I found that one of these creatures had spent 9 years in the county jail, and that the other one had spent about 4 or 5 years in the same place. They had Gutenberg edition. End of chapter.